In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit, one God, amen. Today marks the midway point of the Holy Great Fast. This is the fourth Sunday, and the Church in its wisdom kind of builds upon what we heard last week in the Lost Son with his meeting today with the Samaritan woman. And if you look at all of Christ's dialogue in Scripture, this is the longest one. And it's for this reason that the Church loves this passage so much. And we really see the heart of Christ and we see his desire for everyone. And we see that Christ, in his wisdom, and God, in all his wisdom, provided different roads of salvation for different people. We find some people, men, come to God, or man comes to God. We see this in the parable of the lost son. When he left his father and went to spend his life doing, you know, wrong things and evil things, it wasn't until he was in the, eating the food of the pigs that he realized that I should go back. So he took up himself and he went back to his father. So here we see an example of those who go to him, who search out God, people who come and search out God. And also we see the illustration of the Shulamite in the book of Song of Songs. She is coming to her bridegroom. She says, "The voice of my beloved, behold, he comes leaping upon the mountains, skipping upon the hills." So she goes to her beloved. So this is an example of those people who search out God because they're looking for him. But God also, he searches out for man. And you'll find many examples of this in Scripture, where God actually makes the first step and initiates to come to man. We see this in the very beginning with Adam. When Adam sinned, what happened? Did he come to God? No, but he was actually ashamed and he hid himself. Then God said to him, "Where are you?" So God came to Adam. Same thing with Cain. When Cain was angry with his brother and jealous with his brother and wanted to kill him, God appeared to him and spoke with him and said, "What are you about to do?" So God came to Cain before he killed his brother. We also see in the New Testament the person of Zacchaeus, where this guy was coming out just looking, observing what all the commotion's about. And among all of the thousands of people, Christ says to Zacchaeus, "I want to come to your house today." So Christ is coming to people, coming to the believers, coming to those who are ready to believe. Also next week and the week after, we'll see Christ is coming to those people, to the paralytic man who's at the pool of Bethesda for 38 years. And he's been waiting there very patiently for the moving of the water. And Christ comes to him. The same with the blind man, the poor blind man. He was born blind. Christ came to him. So we see both things. Both men go to God and search out for God, and also God searching for man. And all of this, at the end, God is searching for the salvation of ready souls. And that's why he told the disciples, "Look, the harvest is already white for reaping." So God is searching for man, and man is searching for God. In today's meeting, where the Lord met with the Samaritan woman, we see a person who was broken and hurt. And we see how Christ dealt with her. And maybe this was the longest dialogue that Christ had to show us how to deal and how to understand with people that are hurting. And maybe it was so long because there are many people that are hurting. A lot of us actually hurt from inside. There are unfulfilled needs and there are things that break our hearts. But yet we don't, as the general people, understand this in other people. We understand it when we are broken. But until we are broken, we don't understand it. So I'd like to speak today about how to understand the broken heart and how to deal with the broken heart. I think the first So I will speak of an observation and then lessons for all of us. So observation number one about hurt people is that hurt people can often be offensive. Hurt people can often be offensive. We see in the story of today, the Samaritan woman was obviously searching for love. She wasn't used to being loved in a godly manner. She had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 husbands, and she was working on the 6th. This tells you that she was searching for something, love, but she wasn't able to find it. And then when Christ came to her and he approached her and said, "Give me a drink," she says, you know, very directly, "How are you talking to me? Because you're a Jewish man and I'm a Samaritan woman. How are you talking to me?" And then when he told her, you know, "If you knew the gift of God and what I was offering to you, the living water, you would ask me to give you to drink." And then she basically says to him, "Are you greater than our father Jacob who gave us this well?" So maybe had his disciples been there, especially Peter, it would have said, "Okay, lady, you've overstepped your boundary. You're speaking to him in, you know, in an unkind manner, and we'll take care of you." And we know St. Peter was very, you know, asabishoy. So thank God none of the disciples were there, and maybe that's why Christ sent them away. He doesn't want anybody to interfere. So she maybe offended Christ, but how did Christ deal with her? Did he deal with her and say, you know, "How dare you speak with me like this? Did you know who I am?" No, he didn't. But he kept going with her. He didn't understand, you know, this offense, and he didn't take it, you know, personally. Oftentimes people that are hurt will be offensive. They might hurt us back. This might be just a reaction. Sometimes, you know, if we know somebody is hurt, we بناخد على خاطرنا. يعني if somebody's hurt and they've hurt us back, we say, "How could they hurt me?" and this. But we have to understand, because they are hurting, this is why they're offensive. It's not because they really have something against you or they really want to hurt you. And oftentimes when they do, they feel bad for it, and then they might come, you know, and apologize later. So we have to know that hurt people are offensive. So what is the lesson? How do we deal with people that are maybe offensive, the hurt people that are offensive? I want us to learn to listen to the nonverbal. Listen to the nonverbal. Oftentimes, the nonverbal communicates what the person really feels, not what they say. If you remember when St. Peter, right, when he met Christ, and Christ told him to go out onto the water and to throw out the net, and he's like, "Okay, I just came back, but at your word, I'll go out." And he came back with with the boat full of fish. Do you remember what he said to Christ? He said to him, "Depart from me, for I am a sinful man." So at this point, did Christ leave? No, he didn't leave. Because Christ understood what he meant to say. He understood what he meant to say. He meant to say, "I am unworthy to have you on my boat, and I want you to stay longer." So Christ here wasn't taking verbatim what he said and saying, "Okay, you don't want me here, I'm leaving." No. But he understood what he meant to say. Sometimes when a wife will come and insult her husband and say, "You're this, you're lacking in this, this, and this. You don't show me love, you don't spend time with me, you don't do anything." The husband might say, "All she does is complain." But actually what we need to understand is what she's asking for, what she's crying for. Maybe she's asking for time. Maybe she's asking for love. Maybe she's asking for a hug. So we have to understand the nonverbal. What is making the other person say this? Especially if we know they are hurt and something is bothering them. So the lesson is to listen to the nonverbals of people. The second observation about hurt people is that hurt people interpret every word through the prism of their pain. Hurt people will interpret everything through the prism of their pain. We see the Samaritan woman, when Christ, he said nothing in the beginning but, "Give me a drink." And then she automatically, because of her previous experiences with her husbands, she automatically said, "How is it that you are even talking to me?" So in her mind, there's not a good man out there. And how he must be out to insult me, to accuse me, to treat me poorly. So then she addresses him, kida, you know, very abruptly. I said, how are you talking to me? Because I'm a Samaritan woman and you're a Jewish woman. It was because of her past experiences, her past pains. And sometimes when we deal with hurt people, we have to understand this, that their past pains are playing a part in how they interpret maybe everything or every experience thereafter. So we have to understand this when we deal with them. And the Lord did this with the Samaritan woman when she asked him, you know, to give me a drink, and she said to him, how are you talking to me? What did he do in response? What did he say in the rest of his dialogue? She, being a Samaritan, you know, in the old custom, they had many levels of people. So the highest level are the Jewish teachers. And then after that are the Jews, or the Jewish men. And then after that are like the women. And then after that like are the foreign men. And then after that are the, you know, the foreign women. And then the sinners at the bottom. So if you look at the compare between Christ and the Samaritan woman, he's the teacher, he's at the top, and she's a foreigner and a woman and a sinner. So she's at the very bottom. So she was very surprised how he is talking to her. But how did he deal with her? What he did, he valued the hurt person. He valued her. How did he show that he valued her? The first, he valued her privacy. He valued her privacy. Before he went to talk to her, because he knows that what we're going to talk about might be a sensitive subject, he dismissed all of his disciples. You know, mind you, oftentimes Christ, when he wanted to be transfigured and something glorious, something amazing, he took with him three disciples, right? So I would expect in maybe all of this, you know, important circumstances, he would take three disciples or maybe at least one of them. But here he dismissed everybody, all of his disciples, the ones whom he would go to a place and rest with. He left them, told them to leave, go find me food, and because I need to meet with a soul that is hurting and needs my undivided attention and me only. So he respected the privacy of this person. Sometimes we need to, or oftentimes when we deal with somebody who is hurting, we need to respect their privacy. If it's a husband or a wife, we need to speak with them and address the sensitive subjects, maybe not in front of the whole family, but between just the two of us. And when I do this, I respect their privacy and show them that they're valuable. Also, Christ took the initiative. He knew her circumstances being a woman who was a sinner. And she knew, she was used to, if she saw a man, especially a Jewish man, she would turn her face and go the other way. So he knew that he had to start the conversation. So he did. And because he valued her, he started the conversation. Because he knew that she would be scared to. But he knew that she needed this conversation. Also, he talked with her with compassion. He talked with her with compassion. And the last thing, you know, that he did, and I think this is something we can all learn. I think the fastest way to show somebody that they are valuable is to ask them to do something that they can accomplish. Ask them to do something that they can accomplish. This shows the person that you have something that I need. So it makes them feel what makes them feel valuable. When he said to a woman, give me a drink, it raised her status, because now a man that shouldn't be talking to me is now talking to me. So it makes her feel good about herself. And he knows he doesn't have a pot, he doesn't have anything to draw with. So now if he's thirsty, he's depending upon what? He's depending upon me. Although if you look at the whole story, she's the one that's actually in need. But Christ was making her feel as if she was in need. He asked her for something that he knew that she could accomplish. Is just give me a drink of water. And this helped to instill in her that, you know what, this person in front of me values me. And I'll tell you, unless the person, the hurt person that we're dealing with, knows that we value them, they will never open up and things will never get better. The third observation is that hurt people often find it hard to establish trusting relationships. they find it hard to establish a trusting relationship. The Samaritan woman obviously couldn't establish trusting relationships because she had five husbands. If we can establish a trusting relationship, then this would continue. But she couldn't do so. And often when you deal with hurt people and they have this problem of establishing trusting relationships, they will present themselves in maybe one of two ways. One is they'll either adopt the victim mentality. They'll feel that everybody is against me and I am the victim, and everything that people do to me, they have a bad intention because they have this insecurity. They don't have any trusting relationships. So one, they'll adopt the victim mentality. They'll always think people are against me and I'm the victim. Or two, they will be very suspicious of those around them. They'll be very suspicious. If I hear somebody came and told me something, or the way they said hi to me, did you see her face or his face? You know, it wasn't right. They must have heard something from this person. So because I don't have trusting relationships, I think other people are conspiring against me. Or they heard some bad rumors about me from somebody else, from somewhere else. So this is how hurt people will present themselves, in which they can't establish trusting relationships. So what do we do? What's the lesson for us here? The lesson is to demonstrate that you are on that person's side, that you are on the same team. You want them to realize that you can trust me, and I'm here playing on your side. You know, when there are any two sports, you know, teams play, and you know sometimes they have substitutions outside. The subs wear the same color as their team. So maybe like if I'm playing soccer and the coach has a sub and I'm not sure, I didn't see the sub come in, but I see somebody different, but he's wearing the same color jersey as me, so what, he's on my team. So then I pass him a ball, I trust him. So if the person who is hurt understands that you are on their side, you're playing with them, and you're trying to help them, not accusing them, not blaming them, then they will be likely to pass you the ball and to open up to you, to allow them to help them, to allow you to help them. And Christ did this with the Samaritan woman. He demonstrated that he was on her side and he was searching for the same goal that she was in need of, by not insisting on focusing on her sins. After he had asked her about your husband, where is your husband, or go get your husband, she said, I don't have a husband, she said, I don't have a husband. And he said, you're right, because you know, you had five, and the one you're with is not yours. After he said this, she didn't respond to this, but she tried, maybe because it was embarrassing, she changed the subject, and she started talking to him about the place of worship. Christ didn't say, no, we're not done talking about your sin. Let's go back to your husbands. I want you to confess this. I want you to face up to it. No, he didn't do this. He didn't force her to go back and talk to something that maybe she was uncomfortable or not ready to speak about. So he demonstrated that he was on her side. He wasn't against her. If he had brought up the husbands again, then she would perceive that he's against me. He wants to blame me. He wants to put me down. He wants to make me feel worse than I already am. So he didn't do this. And we need to be cautious of this. The people that are hurt for whatever reason, if they're not ready to speak, we shouldn't press it. If my husband or my wife is not ready to speak about a certain matter because she's hurting, give it time. Don't push the matter, because you're on the same team. Also, we notice that the woman, Christ initially asked her for something to drink. And you know, at the end of the story, she left her water pot and left, right? So he never got his drink of water. Christ didn't, as she was leaving to the city to call her friends or whatever, the people, he didn't say, wait, you didn't give me a drink of water. He said, he just let her go. He let her go. No problem. Go ahead. He didn't make her feel guilty there for not giving him water. He didn't say, you know what, I helped you all of this time and you still didn't give me a cup of water. Maybe that's what we would say. But he didn't say that. He let her go, because he knew the desires of her heart. The fourth observation of hurt people is that hurt people also suffer from low self-esteem. often suffer from low self-esteem. The Samaritan woman went out to draw water at about the sixth hour, which is around 12 noon. And typically the sun is hot and scorching at this time. And this is not the time where the customary people went out to draw water. They would usually go early in the morning or late in the evening because it's very hot. And then you have to carry the water back to the village. But she chose a time where she thought that nobody else would be at the well. And apparently it was only Christ because he was coming to meet with her specifically. So she had low self-esteem. She didn't want to present herself to other people. She didn't feel like, you know, she was worthy to be around other people, and she felt really bad for herself, and I have all these sins on top of me, and it's a burden. How will people look at me? So she felt that she was the lowest of the low. So she went out at the sixth hour. So she felt that she was the lowest. So how do we deal with people that are hurt, that have low self-esteem? I have two lessons here. One is, never focus on yourself when dealing with the hurt person. In the story of the Samaritan woman, when she asked him, "Are you greater than our father Jacob who gave us this well?" His answer could have very well been, and rightfully so, "Of course, I am the one who gave Jacob this well." But then if he had said this, then maybe the conversation would have turned to be about Christ. Who are you? Where did you come from? How are you greater than our father Jacob? And then the focus would have been on who? Would have been on Christ. So actually Christ chose not to answer this question because he doesn't want the focus to be on himself. He wants the focus to be on her and her needs. And again, this makes her feel that he values me. I'm important. He doesn't want to talk about himself. He wants to talk about me. The second, and this is just like, you know, for example, if we go, you know, to a physician, right? And we have maybe something that needs to be extracted, or they're going for some surgery. And he comes and begins the procedure, and all of a sudden some blood shoots on his shirt. What would be the wise physician? Will continue working because the patient is in need right there in front of them. They're bleeding and they need my assistance. But maybe the foolish physician will be worried about his shirt and the blood that's on it. And he'll leave the patient and start worrying about his shirt and getting the Tide cleaning, you know, thing and try to clean his shirt. Christ wasn't like this. He wasn't focused on himself. He wasn't focused on himself. He was focused on her. Lesson two is that he extracted the positive qualities in the person. So when we deal with hurt people with low self-esteem, we need to, one, focus on them, not ourselves, and two, extract the positive qualities. If you look at this woman, you're like, what positive qualities does she have? But you know what? Christ found one. He asked her a question and she spoke truly. So then he says, you know what? You have truly spoken. And he praised her for this twice. He says, you have said well and you have spoken truly. So he extracted from her honesty. Something that he can praise her for. You have said well. You did good. Why? To raise her self-esteem. To make herself more valuable in her own eyes. And when she's valued in her own eyes, then God can work with her. But as long as, you know, she's thinking of herself as low and I'm hopeless, then she would never, you know, get out of this. So he raised her esteem and said, you know what, you're valuable. You're an honest person. So he extracted the positive qualities. And he used, and this maybe we can all learn, I'm sure you've heard before, he used the sandwich method. What this means, he began with praise when he corrected her, or when he rebuked her. He says, you have well said, praise. And then he says about, okay, you've had five husbands, the one you have now is not your husband. And then he ends with, in that you truly, you spoke truly. So he commends her again for her honesty and her speaking the truth. And if you look in the Christ, when he dealt with the bishops in the book of Revelation, the first three chapters, he does the same thing. He begins by saying, I know that you are this, you are good, you are patient, you are long-suffering and all these things, but I have this against you. And they said, if you do this, then I will reward you and such and such. So he buffered the criticism or the comments between two positive qualities. And this is because this will lead the person to understand and to heed it better. When we just say, you're doing this wrong, you're doing that wrong, the person will automatically become defensive and say, they don't understand what I understand. Or they don't know why I did the things that I did. So he buffered it, he used the sandwich method. Maybe we can keep this in our mind. Praise, maybe a small criticism, and praise. The fourth observation is that hurt people can learn to accommodate. This is the last. I'm sorry, the fifth. Hurt people can learn to accommodate the dark side. What do I mean by this? Oftentimes, people that are hurt and that are isolated, they feel like they have no hope. They have nowhere to go. They have no one to turn to, and they say, "Okay." They often give themselves excuses to participate in sin, and they continue in this way because they say, "There's no hope. I'm at the bottom. I can't go any lower, and I know I can't go up, so I just have to deal with it." This poor lady, I'm sure, maybe after the second or third husband, she realizes that I'm not finding what I need, but she allows herself to continue to get married again, a fourth and fifth time, and now she's seeing somebody else, hoping that the next person won't take advantage of her, won't put her down, won't do this, will value her, but she doesn't find. But she allows herself to go through this. Sometimes hurt people allow themselves to go through this dark side because they feel like they have no hope. And even if you look, even in the parable last week in the lost son, the same thing. This lost son could have thought, when he finished all of his father's money and maybe he was hungry for a few days, he could have went to his father's house immediately. But what did he do? He sold himself, like as a servant, to somebody so he can feed the swine, the pigs. And then not only that, he allowed himself to eat the pods that the pigs were eating. So sometimes the hurt people, they allow themselves to go through this dark period, this darkness of sin, a period of time. So how do we deal with people who hurt people, who maybe are stuck in this? We show them God's forgiveness and the beauty of His love and His freedom. We show to them God's forgiveness and how He goes and searches for the sinners and brings them back, and He accepts them and is ready and able to forgive them. And you show them that people who are in the similar situation have victory over this particular sin. It's just like if you meet somebody maybe who is an alcoholic or a drug addict. They have what these meetings called the AA, the Alcoholics Anonymous, for example. These people, it's comprised of people that have recovered from this alcoholism. And they use these people to counsel people that are stuck in it. Why? The foundation of this program is so that they see that I have hope. I know somebody was in the same situation that I'm in now, and they came out of it. So, show them God's mercy and His forgiveness and the beauty of love and freedom in Him. I'd like to conclude by asking, one question. Why do we suppose that the Samaritan woman didn't run away from the Lord? Maybe she experienced other men who maybe laughed at her and criticized her, and she ran from them and fled. Why is it in particular that she stayed and spoke with Christ? You know what I think it is? I think it's because of His attitude. His attitude was, I'm here for you, I want to help you. I'm not here to criticize you, to make you feel smaller, and to say, that you're a horrible person. But He came to her with a loving, a kind spirit. He didn't embarrass her for her sins. He didn't condemn her or judge her, because here He knows that she felt terrible about it already. He respected her as a person and sent His disciples away. So He dealt with her with compassion. And He had a positive attitude when He was dealing with her. Oftentimes when we deal with hurt people and they meet us in an offensive way, it's because we're meeting them with the wrong attitude. So today the Lord is teaching us how to deal with the hurt person. I'm sure all of us know somebody in our life, whether it's my husband, whether it's my wife, whether it might be my child or a friend or somebody who is hurt. Whether they say it or not, they might be hurt by past circumstances or traumatizing experiences. We need to consider how it is that we deal with the hurt person, that we show them that we're on their side, that we want to help them to grow and help them to come to the knowledge of God's righteousness and His glory, and that we can have a share in this when we come to Him with a repentant heart. May God grant us all the wisdom when we deal with others, and allow us to deal with them in kindness and gentleness as Christ did with the Samaritan woman. To Him be the glory forever and ever. Amen.